Hello everybody, it's been a long break, but we are finally back from the working world and back into the world that we all want to be, the world of football managers, football players and football talk. It is episode 21 of the Centre Circle podcast, not the Football Manager Society podcast like I was about to say. And joining me once again, it's Darren and David holding down the fort. Thanks for joining us, David.
Yeah, I feel well rested after a long hiatus. It's kind of like the international break.
Yeah, the international break is the wage slave break. A lot's happened since we've been off the air. We've had Jose Mourinho crashing Manchester United with no survivors. We've had Celtic Man City. We've had Rangers at Aberdeen. Lots been going on in the world of football. And we're going to focus on what's went on with the EFA. Sadly, we've no Englishman here to give their opinion on it tonight, but corruption has once again been exposed in the world of international football because Big Sam Allardyce falls through a trap set by undercover journalists, and he only lasts 67 days as the England manager, but 100% win record.
Yeah, he's probably the best England manager to date.
Statistically unbeatable.
It's a sad day. I can already picture Gaz's smug look on his face.
To give a summary to whoever listens to us but apparently doesn't follow football, in case there is two of you, Sam Allardyce went to meet with a bunch of what he believed to be foreign investors to talk about how to bypass the FA rules on third-party ownership. And he went there, proposed being an ambassador, and really just hung himself with his own rope, you know. Gave away, explained that he's... Did he say he's been doing it before? I can't remember if he explicitly said that.
He's kind of like a track record of it, yeah. But I think it was some other part of the game, not really the third-party ownership.
Yeah, he's always had a reputation for being dodgy, and this was... There's a smoking gun, and then there's watching someone shoot themselves in the head. This might be the biggest scandal in the past 10 years. Because we can't confirm anything about Sepp Blatter, and the World Cup is still ongoing, so we don't know how bad that's going to be.
It's a real dark age for football, isn't it? It really is.
It's a dark age at the same time as the sport being the biggest it's been. You know, it's a weird duality there.
Well, it's the most corrupt sport in the world right now. It has to be.
Mm.
But
boxing.
Well... we're not going to go into that. But
as a boxing fan, I would never compare football to boxing in terms of corruptness. But on you go.
But yeah, one thing I can't really stand with the press, including the Telegraph, that planted this trap by the fictitious Far East firm that they were being the undercovers. And what I really don't like is entrapment. And just going for a fishing expedition and trying to bait these famous footballers or famous, people who are behind the curtains in the football. And behind closed doors, everything gets a little bit grubby. But when you have hard-hitting evidence and exposed Sam Allardyce, you have to give them full credit, because I don't know what the hell Sam Allardyce was doing.
It's been said that investigative journalism is dead in the age of the tabloid and online journalism. I was actually one of the cynics that believed that, and I'm glad that the Telegraph proved me wrong in this as a journalist. But when you were saying about how it's a fishing expedition and they went undercover, remember that there's no way their bosses would have allowed them to just go and put all that legwork in unless they had something.
They certainly did their homework right, I'll give them that. But I mean, Sam Allardyce is probably... he's probably in the best position anyone could be, and that's being the England manager. Why tarnish that with something so sleazy? And I mean, this £400,000 bung that he was allegedly going to accept is completely unethical if you're the England manager, who have... I mean, I don't understand why he's discussing this when he's no longer a club manager. Why should transfers be his centre of attention when he has no influence on transfers? I mean, if he were the Newcastle manager or the Sunderland manager or the West Ham manager, it might have been a little bit different. But you're the England manager. You are the face of England. Why are you ruining your reputation? And it's social suicide. He's not going to be back in a job in football for years. And I think his time has gone. I think that will be his last ever job.
Going to play devil's advocate a little and just point out some places. China, Italy, maybe America would still take him.
Would they though?
I think China would
definitely take them. I mean, money is a real... I mean, money makes the world go round in China, but would they trust him?
Yeah, because he'd get shot if he tried the same thing he tried there, because the Chinese government backs the Chinese league.
I don't know. I think he's kind of ruined his reputation in that suspect.
Oh, he has. Anywhere where the sport itself is an actual attraction and not just a way to make money and a way to put eyes on the country, he's fucked.
But that's only half the story. This is becoming a full-blown ring of corruption, because I believe this is only the beginning of the Telegraph scandals, and they're going to start leaking some more names and the exposure. Like, I mean, Tommy Rice was exposed for 5,000 from Barnsley. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank was involved with QPR.
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, I mean, these are names that are coming out from under the woodwork, and I think there's still more to be revealed. Apparently, there's a rumour going around that there's 8 other Premier League managers involved in these scandals.
Well, as a Scottish football supporter, I'm buckling up my seatbelt and looking forward to hearing more.
And I think Eric Black as well, the Southampton assistant manager, is involved too.
And the worst thing that gets revealed up in Scotland, somebody put a coupon on another team's game.
Well, I mean, Scottish football is a joke in itself, so...
Sorry, what team stopped Man City's winning record?
Not going there. Not going there. You can be smug as you want about it, but...
I will be, I think I've got quite a good reason to be.
Yeah, yeah, whatever. Rub it in. You're better than Man United. I don't care.
And now it's time for Gaz to be smug, because Francesco Guidolin is the first casualty in this season's Premier League sack race. Good and bad decision. I think it's a harsh decision, but not a surprising one.
I think it's a very harsh decision, because looking at Guidolin's the recent games that Swansea have been playing, they've played Chelsea, Southampton, Manchester City twice, Liverpool, and they have Arsenal coming up next. I mean, that is...
It's
probably the toughest running you've had, and they're not going to get a miracle out of Bob Bradley, who's now taken over, because Bob Bradley is completely unknown. Do you know the... Have you heard of Bob Bradley?
Bob Bradley was Seattle Sounders, I believe.
He's been a manager apparently since the early 80s.
Let me just check this, because I think he was at Seattle Sounders. So.
He was not at Seattle Sounders. He was the United States manager for 5 years. He
also, before Klinsmann?
Was it before or after Klinsmann? I think it was between 2006 and 2011. And then he was the Egypt manager, and his latest club was Le Havre in France, in the second division of France.
You know, it's funny, I'd argue that his biggest team so far has been Chivas.
That was back in 2005, and I don't really think there was much going for them back then.
Suppose.
Okay, his win rate is all right. I mean, last season he got 15 wins in 33 games, but he's not a proven manager in the Premier League, and I don't know what they're going to be expecting out of this guy. I mean, he's the first North American manager to manage in the Premier League.
One thing I'll say though is he apparently favours attacking football, and maybe that's the justification for getting rid of Guidolin. Maybe he wasn't looking to compete enough with the games that he was getting.
Oh,
I think it's a bad decision and a harsh one. I'm just trying to get in the head of the the board.
Oh, it's great if you want to play attacking football, but you need strikers who can actually finish. Because, yep. I mean, Llorente and Borja Bastón have been nothing short of dreadful this season.
And that's weird, because I really like Llorente. I don't know what the hell's got into him this season.
It's the pressure of the Premier League. And Borja Bastón, I saw him against Liverpool. He missed two gilt-edged chances. And he didn't even hit the target. He should have been hitting them into the back of the net. Swansea should have won the game, and they ended up losing it in the second half.
That's what happens a lot of the time, though. One team passes up the chance to win the game, and...
But I still think it's a harsh sacking for Gwendolyn. And you know what the worst part is? Today was his birthday.
Oh, that is brutal.
That's really, really brutal, isn't it? I mean, how would you like to celebrate your birthday handing out a P45 and out you go?
Depends how much is my release.
I don't know. You wouldn't want to be sacked on your birthday, regardless of where you're at.
I know, but if you're getting enough money to make it worth your while, you're not going to remember that you've been sacked for a long time.
I still think that's pretty harsh.
But let's move on to man of the match, and I'll take mine first, because mine is somehow the easier and simpler name, and that is Chick Mendy, the Senegalese Italian stallion. I have too many Italian players in my lineup, though. I've got four or five Italian prospects coming in. Don't know why, the regens have just been great this game. But, yep, he's came in, and he's pushing for the starting 11 striker spot. He is competing with Timo Werner for the poacher position, or Wee Donny, or Paul Donaldson for the false nine. And, yeah, he's just banging them in. Let me just try and get his stats. Appearances 13, 6 for the bench, 17 goals, 5 assists.
With the amount of pace he possesses, I would have played him as the advanced forward a lot more than just a poacher.
But I play direct.
But I mean, you could play him maybe as a defensive forward and then link up with another.
9 times out of 10, though, my poacher's getting the ball from either wing-backs or out wide over the top. So I need my poachers to be quick.
Well, it depends. Are you playing with a 1 or 2 striker formation?
2. And my other one is a false 9, so my left and right inside forwards can get involved.
He doesn't really have the stats to play a false 9, I guess, but...
He's doing a job there whenever Paul Donaldson's rating falls, he's doing a job there, and whenever Timo's rating falls, I put him poacher.
Doesn't have great natural fitness, though. So he probably won't be...
Yeah, it looks that way, but I've not had any problems with him at all.
Maybe in the long term it might have repercussions.
I suppose I do a lot of rotating, though. That's the only player I ever have problems with because of my rotating is my centre-back, who's, let's see, natural fitness 12 and stamina 12. Everything else is great. That's his only 2 faults.
Fair enough.
He's also improving, though, so we'll see if that gets better. But, yeah, that's my player of the match this week. Man of the match this week. It's a tough decision because a lot of people are pulling in great ratings right now.
So do you want to take a crack at my player pronouncing him?
Lotaris Alexandravicius. Vicius.
Well done. It's Lotaris Alexandravicius is my man of the match this week. Probably one of my favourite regens that I've had in my journeyman save. He's a Lithuanian right back, but he gets a bucket load of assists for me. He's brilliant on that right hand side. And the way I like to play is you have the winger, but looking for the overlap. And that's where Alexandravicius goes to the byline, whips in the crosses, and he's getting so many assists from that right hand side. He's not the quickest, but he doesn't have best crossing, but he seems to possess so much confidence to do that because he's been outstanding for me. And he's pretty much one of the reasons why we've dominated so well in Lithuania. 11 assists in 29 games in the league, and in total he got a 7.24 average rating. So, I mean, I can't really argue with that. I don't know what it is about right backs in this. I love playing with right wing backs, and they always seem to be clinical. I don't know what it is, but yeah, this guy is probably one of my favourite players in FM16 so far.
Yeah, right backs and left backs seem to be two of the best players that you'll get. For example, Andrew Robertson is such a good purchase in this FM, it's not even funny.
Yeah, well, I mean, for regens, it's a little bit different when you're in obscure nations, but this guy has single-handedly lifted my team. It's brilliant to see somebody from the back line getting involved in so many attacking phases of play.
Yeah, it's all you need is a bit of luck sometimes.
It kind of reminds me of it kind of reminds me of a slower version of Antonio Valencia.
I think I've got that. I've got a Dutch right back who's a youngster. I'm calling him Moko Ono after Yoko Ono, but I think his name is McConnell. I just cannot wait until someone makes a bid for my first choice right back, so I can start developing him. Because he's only had 9 appearances this season, and his shots on target is 100%. His passing rating is 80%. He's made 37 tackles, and his average rating is 7.6. And he's my second choice.
You have good depth in your team, then.
I do. I'm being given the money, obviously, because I'm winning, you know, Continental Cups, so investing in youth.
Well, in Scotland, it's not that difficult.
I have actually made one kind of, I'm completely blanking on the word, but landmark signing this season. And that's the Norwegian Gareth Bale has came up from Spurs. And that is
Mats Møller Daly.
Yep, Daly. I was unsure if it's Daly or Daly when it's E like that.
He used to be a United trainee as well.
He's so good.
I don't know what... I haven't really seen him blossom yet in real life. But he's always very highly rated in FM. Like, well, he usually moves to one of the bigger clubs like PSG or Real Madrid.
Or Celtic. And this save.
Yeah, I was... We're not going to compare Real Madrid and Celtic now, are we?
We beat Man City, man. We can beat anything. Type of fan, and you know that.
But you also lost 7-0 to Barcelona, so...
Yep. Which, by that means it's so would Man City. Oh, I'm not that kind of fan. Third place, though, I think we can do it.
If you want to be ambitious...
No, it's just I have watched Gladbach and I'm still not impressed by them. Even against Barca, I don't know how the hell they got ahead.
Gladbach are very hit and miss, in my opinion. They lost 4-0 last night against Schalke, so they have some good and bad games. Well, because I do follow them quite a bit.
I hope we have a good game and they have a bad game then. But let's move on to your save scout. I've not got much, but... I was just thinking it'd be good if you did a Welsh League save and you managed to get Swansea in a Europa League or something like that and beat them.
I think there was some person from one of the Football Manager forums that did something like a hybrid Welsh League where they would have Swansea, Cardiff, Wrexham, Newport County all in the Welsh League. So they'd be taken out of the English League and put into the Welsh League, but it was always... far too easy for Swansea to win it. Because, I mean, the New Saints would probably be the best bet of catching them, but they never really will. I mean, the Welsh League just isn't very competitive.
Would Cardiff not have a good shout at catching them?
Cardiff, maybe. But they probably won't get to the same level as Swansea. They'd probably be the Rangers of Wales.
Ah, oh, that makes me so happy. But yeah, before we just start bad-mouthing Rangers, what you got for us?
I want to give a shout-out to Jendo from Sorted Out SI, the forums, and he came up with this great idea, because this guy has completed the British Steel Challenge. He actually went about, and I think this idea had been mentioned by me before, but an idea for FM17 is this Scandinavian British Steel Challenge, effectively. So it's a Scandinavian challenge where you have Denmark, Finland, Iceland, Norway, and Sweden. But I think you can also put the Faroe Islands in there as well. And I actually took a crack at it in FM14, but I never really got far because the Faroese League is kind of very obscure and it's hard to move from nation to nation because I won 3 Faroese titles with NSI Runavik and I never really got anywhere. But the trick is you have to start with no badges, no footballing experience. And you can only sign Norwegian, Swedish, Danish, Icelandic, Finnish or Faroese players. And you have to win pretty much every trophy that you can in those divisions. So you have the Superligaen, the Vikingsliga,
the Superligaen. That sounds like the most stereotypical Scandinavian thing, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the Danish league. The Pepsi Dials Karla, the Tippeligaen and the Allsvenskan.
So it's the Scandinavian Steel Challenge?
Pretty much. Or the Nordic Viking Challenge, the one I came up with. But it's pretty much the same thing. I also think the Faroese League is probably one of the funnest leagues to manage in FM.
I don't even know the Faroese League was considered Scandinavian.
I mean, because it's kind of a territory of Denmark, it kind of would be considered Scandinavian.
Well, you know me in geography anyway, so, you know.
Yeah, because you know that Qatar is in Europe, don't you?
Oh, yeah. The great European superpower of the 1980s, Qatar.
I was being completely ironic there because it's not in Europe.
I just no-sold it like a champ.
No, but you probably would have fell for it anyway, like Allardyce fell for the Far Eastern movement.
Fall for it like Chris and a tucked ladyboy on holiday. Can you believe he might get deducted points for talking shit on YouTube?
I think that's ridiculous now, in fairness.
Apparently it's went beyond a complaint to a formal report now. That's brilliant. But anyway, speaking of great services towards football, I have claimed my 13th Rangers manager scalp after pumping them 6-0 at Ibrox. So yeah, I've looked at the amount of managers that went through since I started there. 9 times out of 10, it's usually after an old firm they get sacked. So, yep.
Wasn't that one the one that included Moyes?
Yeah, that was the most... I think that's the most satisfying moment in Football Manager 16 for me. That was terrific. They're also 9th place and not looking good, so...
Like, who's second best now in Scotland, then?
I will check, but it's probably going to be Hearts.
Yeah, Hearts usually turn out very well.
Hearts are 7 points clear in second place. Dundee United third place with 51, then Hibernian. It's always a top three, really, because that's 36 points for Hibs.
It's either Hearts or Dundee United that do second best.
Take a wee glance at their team and see if any names stand out.
Well, I guess I'll talk about my headliner was the second coming of Christ, and his name is Evgeny Zakharov, who's a Russian striker who was part of my title-winning team. Yes, because we won the Lithuanian title because he scored a hat-trick against Shule in probably the biggest game of our season. We won 3-0, and Zakharov, who hadn't scored in over 10 hours of football, and he's been so injury prone that he's missed half the season. But he came back and, you know, ending his goal drought, he gets a hat-trick against Shule. But also a special mention to Stumbras, who got a late equaliser against Sudova. Because the Sudova were 2-0 up, and this was about 2 games ago, we were, I think, 5 points clear of them. So we had to make sure that Sudova had slipped up. They were 2-0 up against Stumbras, but Stumbras got a late equaliser to equalise it 2-2. But the credit must go to Zakharov for the hat-trick, because it was absolutely superb.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at Hearts' team. Besides a lone player from Liverpool and a lone player from me, I'm not seeing anyone particularly great in their team at Hearts. So I'm not sure why they're second, whereas Dundee United have Ben Amos, Conor McGrandles, Robbie Muirhead and Russian Hepburn Murphy. The The last one was developed at a Celtic academy as well.
Ben Amos is not great.
In FMs, he tends to be good.
I actually signed him in Estonia with Flora Tallinn. He was my third choice keeper.
Really? How badly did he get developed there?
He was terrible. He was just basically a fringe player as a backup.
Like, here he's past his prime, but he's, you know...
This was him at about 31.
He's had a good career in England. He's been a kind of journeyman. He's played for Man United. He got some starts at United, then went to Peterborough for a while. Was a constant there, then was loaned to Mold. And he was a constant there. Then he went to Oldham. 16, not great. Got an injury. Hull took him for two seasons. Carlisle took him on a transfer, and then he got sent back to Man United for free. And then Bolton took him for four seasons. Then Dundee United have had him for four seasons. Journeyman career.
So you were pretty much listing off his entire career there.
Yeah, like he's had a journeyman career.
Yeah, but I mean, he was never going to be bought back by United. He was never going to make it into the United team in the end. He was just one of those players we had to ship out, hoping he would develop, and he just never did.
Because
Mold were one of our feeder clubs back then.
To sum up, Hearts are pricks and beat me 1-0 via penalty. Everyone else is shite.
Tell everyone how many games you lost because of it.
116 games. No losses, no draws. Out the window because of a penalty in the 18th minute. I had 43 shots on target.
Who was our keeper?
And
don't say it was Ben Amos.
No, that's Dundee United. Sven Ulrich. Jarl's Winter.
Sven Ulrich?
Yep.
Why does that name sound familiar?
Bayern Munich.
Oh yeah, he was one of the...
Backup keeper in Bayern Munich at the start of the game.
Yeah. And he's turned out at Hearts.
Three seasons at Bayern, he didn't make any appearances. He moved to Dortmund on a free, made six appearances in his first season there, kept one clean sheet, went down to the second team for the next season, one appearance, conceded one goal, and then he went to Hearts on a free. First season at Hearts, 37 appearances, 60 conceded, 9 clean sheets. And then second season, this season, 25 appearances, 18 conceded, 10 clean sheets already.
Like, Ulrich is quite old. He's 28 now. In real life.
On my save, he is... 33.
I suppose he'd be in his prime by then.
Yeah, goalkeeper 33 is not that bad.
Yeah. But I mean, he was never going to break into the Bayern team with Neuer as number one.
Yeah, he's a 1.5 star report on a... on my scouts still, which considering the quality of my goalkeepers is outstanding.
No, I think it's good to see him finally breaking out of the shackles of Bayern Munich.
The shackles of Munich. That'd be a hell of a book. The shackles of Munich. Anyway.
Well, off that tangent, I guess I'll talk about my week analysis, where... I've now got my 18th trophy in 15 years of management because I've won the League and Cup double in Lithuania. It was really touch and go because we were having such a good spell and we were 9 points clear, but we started dropping points, needless points, and then we were suddenly only a point ahead of Sudova, who were definitely the bane of my save because they kept beating us. No, it wasn't actually Sudova, it was Trakai who were always beating us. And, you know, those two teams combined just really pissed me off. And we dropped something like 6 or 7 points. So it was really touch and go until we made it to the Champions Playoff. Whereas, if you didn't know, it's basically like the split of the... You know the Scottish split?
Yeah, it's called the Championship Group, but it's always just been called the Split.
Well, it's called the Champions Playoff in Lithuania, but it's contested between the top six teams in Lithuania. And the best team from Lithuania actually got relegated, which was quite surprising. Žalgiris, which is like the equivalent of Manchester United getting relegated. So
what's going to happen this season?
Well, I mean, they got relegated. We ended up winning 4 on the bounce, and we claimed the title by 8 points in the end. We beat off teams like Sudova and Trakai, so we won the league, and we also won the Lithuanian Cup over Šiauliai, beat them by 2-1. And my next club, if I ever get to play FM, is Skonto Riga in Latvia. So I'm looking for a trio of Baltic titles, because I've already completed Estonia and Lithuania. So the next step is Latvia.
18 and 15 years, though, that's outstanding.
Some say it will be outstanding, some say it might be a bit easy, because I've jumped to so many different clubs.
Still has a lot of trophies.
Obscure trophies, but yeah, I'll take that.
I'm trying to see how many I've got. I've got 55 awards, but I know that counts months and stuff. Like,
I think I've only got like 3 personal awards, because there's no real manager of the month.
Cup wins 18, league wins 6.
It's a bit underwhelming. How do you get 3 times as many league trophies? Like, you won the Scottish Cup, the League Cup. What else did you win?
I have won Cup Winners' Cup, European Super Cup, and Champions Leagues a few times. Wait, how is that underwhelming?
Sorry. Just the way you said that with the numbers, I thought that was a little bit strange. I've only won it 6 times.
I'm only 6 seasons in.
Yeah, and then it dawned on me. Yeah, I'm very tired.
I know, I can tell. We can skip manager watch if you want.
I actually have some very interesting manager watches, because I'm in 2030 now, so there's very interesting movement.
Okay, what's our first team?
Start with Manchester United.
Oh, that's Guardiola.
Really? Guardiola at United?
Yep.
That's
Well, he never went to City, so there's no affiliation there in Massive. Yeah.
The manager at Manchester United is a Romanian called Laurențiu Rijkaard.
Rijkaard?
Yeah, he's the Steaua Bucharest manager in real life, but he moved to Gladbach, Leicester, and then to Manchester United.
Huh. What's the blue end of Manchester League in yours?
Well, he's won back-to-back Premier League trophies, so...
What's the blue end of Manchester League in yours, Siv?
Manchester City's manager is now Rui Vitória, the Portuguese manager. He was Benfica manager in real life.
Yeah.
Then managed Portugal and now Man City.
I've actually got a Portuguese man myself at Man City, as the special one has made his way to Man City.
No way.
Yep, let me take a look at his
career. So Guardiola's at United and Mourinho's at City.
Yep. So, he stayed at... he's been at Porto from 2016 to 2020. And then Manchester City from the 4th of July 2020, and still there. And it's now 13th of February 2022.
That's quite strange now that the roles are reversed.
Yep. Who we got next on the list?
Barcelona.
Okay. They're second in La Liga right now. Allegri,
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to take a wild guess who's the Barcelona manager? And it's not Moyes, don't worry.
Is it Jose Mourinho at, like, really old?
No. It's actually a former Real Madrid player.
Zidane?
Xabi Alonso is the... Barcelona manager.
I've never even seen him get coaching badges.
He was the under-19 manager for Spain, and then he became the Barcelona manager. But he hasn't won the league yet. He won the Copa del Rey. That's about it. Not even a Champions League for them.
Yeah, I'm guessing our next one is the other side.
Real Madrid.
Nothing interesting in mine. Rafa Benitez.
This guy, Luis Zubeldia, is the Real Madrid manager.
I have no idea who that is.
Neither do I. He starts in Mexico. He manages Santos Laguna, then managed Club America, and now he's at Real Madrid. And he's actually doing a bloody good job. He won a quintuple this season.
Jesus.
Champions League, Club World Cup, Spanish Super Cup, Copa del Rey, and the La Liga.
I'm just checking the...
He doesn't even look that good, in fairness.
I'm looking at Spain. Rafa and Allegri have been split in Spain for the most part. Lots of runners-up and winners on both sides.
Pep Guardiola is the Spain manager, by the way.
Ah, the usual.
I haven't seen him take an international job. It's usually clubs he takes. Anyways, before we go off on a tangent, let's have a few questions.
I'm guessing Simon will be in one of them.
That is correct. So yeah, press conference. Simon Sarico asks, have you had someone play far better than their attributes would suggest?
I've got quite a couple just now. I have Davy Frame and Matt Phillips are the two that come to my mind, especially in the drafts. Matt Phillips is a monster. But the biggest one would be Calvin Miller in FM 15 again.
Yeah, he never really turned out well in FM 16, did he?
No, they've majorly nerfed him, and that makes me sad. He's St. Johnstone's top scorer though for the last like six seasons.
Well, I mean, I can't really answer that because I pretty much haven't played a mainstream save in a while. If I can remember back into one of the draft modes, I'm trying to think who was one of the standout players in my draft, and I can't remember. I think it was Jason Punchin, actually. But he's quite decent.
Yeah.
But if it's one player, I think of Mikel Antonio because of what he did to me against in
that was hilarious.
The draft with Chris.
I don't know what it is. Sometimes a player just decides to be unplayable.
Like he's good, but he's not good enough to score four fucking goals against me.
Especially against your defense, if I remember right, you had a good back line.
It was good, but Antonio just sliced through like Swiss cheese.
It's a shame you weren't playing with my Swiss centre-back, so that would have been fantastic.
Next question comes from Kiridharan Jayakumar.
I'm glad you took that one.
Well, I'm hoping I pronounce that as well, otherwise he might get offended. But name 10 underrated footballers. I think we're going to limit it to 3 because we don't have time to talk about 10.
Going to say it based on what I've seen this season in person rather than FM. Ewan O'Connell, Celtic under-20s, and he's had a good run in the team. Stephen Mallon, he is currently on loan at St Mirren but is a Celtic player. He's got a great presence in the middle, but his big fault is that he wants to be a striker and wants to score all the goals. He's got the ability to score from 30 yards, like, reliably, but he always wants that glory as his main problem. When he passes the ball and spreads play, he's a much more effective player, and he needs to focus on his job rather than the striker's job. And John Baird, who I actually only saw a couple of times this season, I saw him Saturday night there. He is a number 9, experienced number 9 for Falkirk, and his movement is just top notch. And especially for a player as old as he is, his speed is just perfect. He knows exactly where to be to give himself the best chance of getting the ball, and he knows how to cause defenders problems with his runs. And considering how small he is as well, he's got pretty good at using his body effectively. He might be a good cheap purchase for Rangers if they manage to stay up.
Yeah, it was at this time that we just realised that the recording software had cut off from Darren's finishing of the question. So, my response to Kieran Darren's question about underrated footballers, in my opinion, I don't really have any. But I do like to check some of the European leagues to see if there are certain players that are blossoming through. I do follow Serie A quite a lot, the Italian league, obviously. Avid fan of Sassuolo. And I saw the match against AC Milan at the weekend, and I saw one player in particular who could be a very interesting player for AC Milan. Scored a beautiful goal as well. He goes by the name of Manuel Locatelli. I think AC Milan have some really good youth prospects coming through in their team, and of course Donnarumma is probably one of those, the goalkeeper. But I wouldn't call him underrated, because he's tipped to be the next Buffon, really. Players in the Sassuolo team I might recommend to you. Well, obviously the striker of Gregory Defrayle, the French striker. He's been quite strong this year with the absence of Berardi because of injury. If you're looking for a good right back, I would highly recommend Sime Verschalko. He plays now for Atletico Madrid. I don't know if he gets enough credit in the Atletico Madrid camp. And one player from the Bundesliga, which I'm quite a fan of at the moment, is the Dortmund player Julian Weigl. I think he's been a rock in the midfield. I think he could be an important playmaker for the forthcoming season for Dortmund. And even Javier Hernandez, I think he's been one of the players who've slipped under the radar constantly. And, you know, when he left Manchester United to settling a career in the Bundesliga with Leverkusen, he's just not stopped scoring. He's been sensational for Bayer Leverkusen, and really regret him leaving. He got 17 and 28 last season. He's already got 5 goals and 5 appearances this Bundesliga season, so this Mexican is a serious candidate for an underrated player. So that answers your question, since we got cut off. We're going to end the podcast here because, of course, Darren is no longer here. And if you want to find him, you can find him on Twitter, I believe. It's Darren_Carrigan, I think, on Twitter. He also has an email of scottishwolf@hotmail.co.uk. As for me, you can find my links facebook.com/dbsc16. And you can also find my career on Sorted Out SI, which is climbing Jacob's ladder. I haven't been playing much FM lately, so it hasn't been updated as regularly as I'd hoped. But to close out the show, we're going to play a little bit of, well, Darren's requested to play a number from Rocky Horror Show, but we're not going to do that. We're going to play something else. So until next time, enjoy yourselves. Winter is coming, so wrap up well.
You're my last breath, you're a breath of fresh air to me. I am empty, so tell me your care for me. You're the first thing and the last thing on my mind. In your arms I feel sunshine. I'm but it's not enough. And my patience has shot, so I'm calling your bluff. Give up your soul unto the moon.